Emily Kaplan, Tim Kalishaw, Sarah Spain, Kevin Blackstone. For your first course, deconstructed Bucks. Yes, delicious. How the Nets made a meal of Milwaukee. And look, Blake Griffin found the fountain of I'm not in Detroit anymore. Let's go. The Nets without Harden rolling, but we start with flambéed Milwaukee. To let up 125, to have these numbers, Giannis minus 22, Holiday minus 27, Middleton minus 30, and to go down 0-2. The final score was 125-86. These Bucks, something's happening to this team in the second round every year, and they transmogrify into something feeble. How do you regroup after a loss like that? Around the horn to Tim Kalishaw.
Oh, sure, they lose by 39 and you go straight to me. How do you fix that after a 39-point loss? I appreciate
that. Go to work, Tim. Let me hear it.
I can't tell you this. Teams can lose series after going up 2-0. I have seen that recently.
So yes.
I do know that's possible. However, this team seems to be Brooklyn's starting to play at the all-world level, even without Harden. Durant, 6'11", can't guard him out there, doing what he does. It's shocking that Giannis and Middleton and the rest of them played as poorly as they did. I mean, we've seen them get beat before and be disappointing before. We haven't seen them get obliterated in the first quarter and be blown out of the gym before. So that's what they have to respond to. And Middleton is a streaky guy, and Giannis has a lot of pride. They'll play better at home, but can they beat Brooklyn? It certainly doesn't look.
I don't think you answered the question there, Tim Kalishaw. Let me ask Sarah Spade, how do you regroup after you lose 125-86?
Well, you get back to what you're good at, and you hope that your coach makes some changes. They took 21 fewer shots in the paint and scored 20 fewer points in the paint. There were 430 Bucks passes to 607 for the Nets. The ball movement was stagnated. They went to isolation on the perimeter. They got away from what they're good at, and they let the other team dictate their success. Giannis Antetokounmpo was shooting from 4 feet further away from the basket every single time Blake Griffin was the primary defender on. He let him scare him out of going inside because he was shooting poorly from the free throw line, which he can't do if he's an MVP player. And you can't play zone against the best shooting team in, like, the history of the NBA, and they'll just shoot over the top of it. So those are all the things that they could adjust and hopefully do a little better next time.
Wow. Tim Kalishaw's got jokes, and Sarah Spain's counting the number of passes.
Can I go again?
No, you're going the wrong way. Let's put you in the box, Timmy. Kevin Blackstone joined us.
And, of course, the Bucks could do something else with numbers. They could outscore the other team and get a couple of victories. But let's talk about the thing that they can do that they do well during the season that they haven't done during this series so far.
Thank you.
And that's shoot the three-pointer, right? They're shooting 25% from the three-point line. They normally shoot about 40% from the three-point line. You got to do better than that. And at this time, when you've got two MVP trophies, you need to man up. You need to say, I'm going to be the guy who tries to stop Kevin Durant. That's what LeBron James would do. And Drew Holiday, who we have championed as being a great offensive player and a great defensive player, you're going to need to step up and try and guard a guy, or at least control a guy who's all world like Kyrie Irving. No problem with them not having Harden. They hadn't had Harden for much of the second half of the season, right? And we're a winning team without him. So it might be harder for them to try and incorporate Harden into what they're trying to do in the postseason than play without him. But you know what? 2-0 is no big deal. What's that old saying in basketball? The playoffs don't start until the home team.
All right, so this series hasn't started, but it's halfway over. I get what you're putting down. Emily, we'll turn to you now, and maybe you could start with that one point Blackstone was making. Is this all on Giannis now? I mean, you got two MVP rings, or trophies, I should say, and this is the second round again looking like the team is shaky.
First, I'm not going to get all the fancy chalkboard math that Sarah had, so I'm just going to tell you guys, I'm in Denver.
Look at that! I didn't even notice!
His chalkboard. He left me instructions, too, but then I realized it's just chalk, Woody. You don't need instructions.
That is incredible. Look, good job out of you, Emily. You nailed Woody.
Thank you. You know, I think the issue for the Bucks really is that they're dead. They feel dead. Look at them on the bench yesterday. They look dejected. They didn't look like a team that believed in themselves. When you shot as poorly as you did in game one, you have to control the things that you can control. And yet they lost the turnover battle 9-3 in the first half. Sarah pointed out the only advantage they have in this series is being in the paint. And yet they didn't even get to the rim once, take a shot from the rim once in the first quarter. You have to get back to that in game two. The biggest issue I have for them, and getting back to Giannis, is that KD is making Giannis look like Thanasis. Heck, Blake Griffin, who got cut from the worst team in the league, is making him look like Thanasis. Yeah. You can't have that. Yeah.
Griffin hadn't dunked for a year and a half before he came to Brooklyn, and now he's cramming on Giannis. Let's go back to Tim Kalishaw. Same question I asked you before, Tim. How do you regroup, though, after going down 22-4?
I told you people can come back from big deficits. Yes. Now watch this. If you remember 2 months ago, we were talking about the Brooklyn Nets, and I told Brooklyn co-owner Mina Kimes, who said James Harden's the most important player on the team, I said, no, Kevin Durant is the most important, as long as they have Durant and either Harden or Irving. Doesn't matter even which one, because the third one just kind of, that becomes a trading, okay, it's your turn, Kyrie, okay, it's your turn, Harden. Durant is the one they had to have, and unfortunately, the Bucks don't have anybody who can really guard him. Now, he's not going to make every shot, and it gets tougher on the road. And Milwaukee's role player.
But what is this? The Bucks don't have anybody to guard Kevin Durant. Don't they have the reigning defensive player of the year on their team? It just seems like Giannis is a really nice guy. We all love Giannis. His game blows your mind in the regular season, as do the Bucks' game. But when you get to the second round and all eyes are on him, let me bring this to you, Kevin Blackstone. Do you believe the Nets, even without Harden, are the best team left?
Well, I mean, after these two games, it certainly looks like that, the way they've been playing. So, yeah, but you know what? It just makes me look bad, and I'll admit it, because I thought the Bucks were the best team coming into this. And
thank you for reminding us. Yes.
And I also thought that Blake Griffin was washed up, and he apparently wasn't the other night.
Zara Spain.
I just want to add, and I want to say this in the nicest possible way, the same way we treat Giannis, because everybody seems to like Coach Budenholzer. I would be interested to see if this Nets team will look as effective on the defensive side against a coach who is game planning significantly better than what we're seeing right now from the Bucks.
Emily Kaplan, last word on this.
Yeah, I think they're the best team in the league. Outside the big three, Nets players are averaging 66 points and 55% field goal shooting from in this series. What other team can offer that?
Yeah. We've been horrible. We'll move on. Sixers-Hawks game two. Let's start here with these plays. When Trae Young goes in, uses his body, and draws a foul. Here it is on Tybal. I mean, and you'll see it on Ben Simmons to a lesser degree. He got two foul calls on Simmons, though, in this game one. It's cagey. It's a tough call for refs to adjudicate. Doc Rivers spent minutes talking about this yesterday. He said Simmons gets penalized for being 6'10", and he has a catalog full of calls like this from all season. Kevin, does Doc Rivers have a point here? Trae Young's getting away with something.
I don't think he's getting away with something. I mean, Trae Young has gotten to the line all season long. That's one of the things that he does. He's a very crafty offensive player. He's not just a three-point shooter. But Doc is obviously frustrated. One of his best players is not being able to guard him, maybe like he's guarded people before. And it's easy for a 6'10", 240-pound guy to look like he's mauling a guy as slight a build as Trae Young. The other thing is he can't afford to have it go the other way, because Trae Young was absolutely roasting Danny Green. But you know what? You got to take your hat off to Trae Young. He's just an outstanding offensive player. But I think this is a series that Doc will find a way to make it work and try and get the ball out of Trae Young's
Emily, game. You hear Doc Rivers, and this sounds like a lot of coaches playing the refs out in the media here. Does he have a point, though?
You know, he sounds like a lot of coaches, but he doesn't sound like the coach of the number one seed. This is very unbecoming for a coach of the number one seed. Stop complaining and focus on the positives. I honestly think he's trying to change the conversation so we're not talking about Simmons' offense or his bad free throw shooting. Instead, we're talking about this. But if he had so much faith in Simmons of guarding Trae Young cleanly, why did he start game one like that? Why did he wait until halftime to make that adjustment? I think Trae Young has showed us all year long he is so crafty. Not one person, not even one of the greatest defensive players in the leagues like Ben Simmons can guard him on his own. You have to throw multiple bodies on him, and it's not the ref's fault.
Tim Kalishaw, is Trae Young getting away with something here?
He's getting away with something that the league allows, and it's unfortunate the league allows it, but, I mean, Luka Doncic does it and James Harden does it. You jump into the defender, and the shooter gets the call. And Trae Young, even just in his third year, might be better at it than anyone. I mean, he jumps sideways into guys. He jumps backwards into guys. And As Kevin, I think, said, he's very slight of build. So you think, oh, you protect the little guy. And so anybody guarding him, especially Ben Simmons, is much bigger. Doc Rivers is trying to get the fans on top of that tonight. The first time there's a foul call and Young's going to the line, he wants the fans going crazy and see if any of that affects a referee's call down the stretch.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because, of course, we love to see these slight shooters be able to fire from anywhere, but they're at an advantage if they can also jump into you. So that is bad. And so is what Doc Rivers is trying to do, which is sort of, you know, move his way into the brains of the officials before this. It's probably wise, but to Emily's point, it's an interesting approach when you're a number one seed. I will point out that Trae Young in the second half of that game was 3 of 10 shooting for just 10 points once you took Danny Green off of him. And that's what Doc is trying to get to. He doesn't want Simmons out because of fouls. He wants him to be in there guarding this guy. And he's going to be a lot less effective against that combination of Simmons and others than he was against Green. And that's going to require him to be able to out there, which Emily, I think, is probably why he didn't start him out, but he didn't want to get in foul trouble and not be available for the rest of the game.
How's tonight won, Kevin Blackstone?
76ers.
That's a team name. How? Zara Spade, how is tonight won?
How is tonight won? The same thing. Their secondary approach to covering Trae Young with more bodies and with better people than Danny Green right from the start slows him down.
Tim Kalishaw.
Joel Embiid reminds us of his MVP credentials and
Emily Kaplan.
76ers.
Trae Young. The 76ers cannot have an answer for Trae Young. That's how the Hawks win.
Kevin, I'll give you one more chance, but you have to do it in Doc Rivers' voice if you do it, okay?
Oh, don't blame it. Don't blame it on Ben Simmons. He's trying to do his best. We'll get this ball inside
today. All right.
To Joel Embiid, I think he'll break through.
All right, Embiid will break through. Thank you very much. By yourselves next.
Give the man a point.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Welcome back to Around the Horn, coming to you from the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17.
You know who doesn't get enough credit? The sun. Incandescence, radiating energy, spawning all life. And you know who else doesn't get enough credit? These suns, this team. Incandescence, radiating energy. The crowd last night, the fourth quarter. Chris Paul, how'd he look to you guys? Tim Kalishaw, number one takeaway from Suns 122, Nuggets 105.
It would be that DeAndre Ayton, the closest player to the Sun on the Phoenix roster, if he can continue to play like that against Jokic and you know, be anywhere near even points and rebounds, Denver doesn't have a chance. Ayton's got great hands, great moves. Tremendous game for him last night.
Zara Spain, number one takeaway.
Yeah, it would be Ayton, you know, burning Jokic's productivity like the sun. Just 2 for 9 in the second half with Ayton as his primary defender. And if you can put single coverage on him, it prevents Jokic from being able to facilitate, which is as big of a deal as just stopping him from performing on his own.
Kevin Blackstone?
I don't know what you all were watching in those highlights, but I saw a whole lot of Chris Paul going around, I guess, the son of Ayton. Are you kidding me? He was supposed to be hurt. All of a sudden in the fourth quarter, looks like he was taking Geritol by the six-pack or something. He's shaking people off. He's hitting the step-back jumper. He's at the elbow dropping jumpers. It's incredible.
I thought the same. And it's vitamin D is what he's taking. Come on now. Emily Kaplan, number one takeaway.
We know what Denver is. It's a one-headed monster, but they don't have the heat or chemistry to keep up with four players that score 20 points and 55% shooting from the three. That is as many as we've seen since the 2013 Warriors. Also, I take the Sun seriously. I brought SPF 100 with me to Vegas.
Of course. You're right about Denver being a one-headed monster. I mean, that's Woody, typically, but now you're there today, you know? Buy or sell two, the Islanders 5, Bruins 4. New York is one win away from advancing, and they capitalize on the power play yesterday, which caught Boston coach Bruce Cassidy's attention. And just like Doc Rivers last segment, he spent minutes talking about officiating. I'm not sure if he keeps a catalog like Doc Rivers is, but did say it's like everyone views the Islanders as saints and as the cleanest team on the ice, and as his Bruins as the baddies, and that's not right. Emily, what's that play here?
The Bruins are the more skilled and talented team, but there's something the NHL doesn't do that the NBA does do, and that's protected stars. Connor McDavid went through an entire first-round series without drawing one foul despite nearly two dozen infractions. So yes, Bruce Cassidy, you're frustrated, but you're the fourth coach to complain about officiating. It's not just you guys.
Who is the better team in this series, Emily?
The Bruins are the more talented team. The Islanders have a better team identity.
Okay, I think you're saying then the Islanders are the better team, all right? Is that what I'm hearing here? Ooh, you're really sitting on the fence there. Kalisha, how about you?
I think Bruce Cassidy knows what happened to the Bruins a couple years ago in the finals against the Blues. Craig Berube's team kind of beat him up, kind of played a little over the edge and got away with it. And he doesn't want the Islanders to get away with anything, and he doesn't have any idea how they're going to win in Nassau Coliseum in Game 6.
Tara Spain.
Well, let's go to the facts, right? So during the regular season, the Bruins were the third most penalized team and the Islanders were the least penalized. And yet in this series, both have received exactly 40 penalty minutes and exactly 13 power plays. So they're getting called the same, even if you came in with the precedent as a team that's going to get penalized more, and you're the one complaining? Nah. Mm-hmm.
And Kevin Blackestall. Mm-hmm.
Well, he wasn't going to come out and say, I'm being outcoached. I mean, shots on goal 44-19 and you lose. For LaMarfin, goal 40 saves. Are you kidding me? Barry Trotz is in Cassidy's head right now, and he just can't admit it. I wouldn't either.
The many saints of Long Island, Multisante. We'll move on. The standing ovation, everybody, Oklahoma fans included, gave Odyssey Alexander. She walked the field. This was everything. And this is everything the World Series has been about, but there's more. Oklahoma, Florida State playing for the millionth day in a row. Pitchers on a 1,000-pitch count. No days rest. And we got a great title game tonight. Sarah Spain, you can start there if you want, because it's number 1 versus number 10. But I also have another question I want to ask you. Go ahead, Sarah.
Okay, I'm starting by putting my money on the favorite, the team looking for their fifth championship and their third and fifth in five of these, and that's Oklahoma. The Seminoles have put on a great run, but only one double digit has ever won, and it was Oklahoma when they were a double digit. So my money's on the
Seminoles. Kevin Blackstone, Oklahoma, Florida State.
I like the Seminoles. I mean, they're on a historic run. If you look at this team, not just this year, but over the last couple seasons in elimination games, eight straight, they've been able to pull off. So I like that momentum that they've got going.
Emily Kaplan, when you consider the run both these teams had in this incredible World Series, who's been more impressive?
Well, Florida State maybe has a better team identity, but I think Oklahoma is more talented. And Kyere Jennings, this incredible freshman, hit .437 with 27 home runs and makes incredible catches in the field, too.
Tim Kalisha.
A regular panelist who shall remain nameless, we'll call her Monica McNutt, has nicknamed me Mudge, short for curmudgeon. I don't know anything about that, but I know Kaylee Mudge, 5 for 5 for Florida State. Stick with the Seminoles and Mudge.
All right, let's talk a little bit. You've heard Oklahoma head coach Patty Gasso talk about the run this whole tournament has been and pushing players so far past the limit because of some weather, but also these late night games. You think you saw it catch up with Odyssey Alexander as well, Sarah Spain?
Yeah, I mean, they need to have a day off between bracket play and the championship series. That allows for rain delays. That allows for games that are starting at midnight and finishing at 2:30. This is the fastest growing sport in college. And if you want it to be on ESPN, which you do, it shouldn't be about fit them in where they get in. It should be about make those spaces available for a sport that's grown in 390% in revenue in the last decade. 70 teams in softball in the NCAA making over $1 million in revenue. Put them where they belong and don't make them get shoved into a spot because of the rain or otherwise.
Send us the break, Sarah Spain. There it is. Showdown is next.
Hey, Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
First day of mandatory camp for the Packers that Aaron Rodgers has missed. He is officially a no-show. $93,000 fine unless the team decides to waive it. Sarah Spain, Emily Kaplan, first time meeting in showdown ever. You're the Packers, Emily. Is it a tough love fine for you, or do you waive it to try to get in the good graces?
Yeah, the Packers waive it. They relax because, like a good neighbor, Jordan Love is there, and they can evaluate him just like they used all those times that Brett Favre was in Mississippi to evaluate
Jordan
Aaron Rodgers.
Love is there reminding you that you cannot go into a season with Jordan Love as your starting quarterback. You send the fine so you don't make a precedent, but just circle the due date, and it's way far from now.
Emily from State Farm, getting the point. Showdown 2, look at this crowd as Arkansas advances to the Super Regional. Woo! There was that, and then there was another home run, a big home run, a grand slam, actually, and watching your home run, but not too long, the umpteling Dallas Baptist to keep it moving as they go on to the Super Regional. Is a player watching their own home run within the umpire's jurisdiction, Sarah Spain?
I feel like you don't even know me, Tony. It's me. It's Khaleesi here. You think I'm going to tell you not to pimp out your homers? You think I'm going to tell you that someone should keep it moving when you hit a grand slam? Come on.
Emily?
The ump has big Joe West energy, and that is not a good thing. Let the kids play, and remember, they are just kids. The only thing that would make this more ridiculous is the guy came out in the chicken suit. Again, a Joe West thing.
Oh, this is a good one today. Emily Kaplan, I'm going to really want to see what you have in the blackboard behind you in FaceTime here. Let's go.
Renee Hess is a hockey fan from California, and every time she went to an NHL game, she noticed she never saw two black women sitting together. So she formed a community online. They now become a nonprofit, the Black Girl Hockey Club, a mentorship program, 26 scholarships to girls all over the world, from Nairobi to Winnipeg to California. And yesterday, the NHL recognized her with the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award. She is a finalist. Congratulations, Renee. You are making hockey a more inclusive space.
Oh, that's a great FaceTime. Thank you for that, Emily. I guess I never realized there is no chalkboard during showdown here. But you did it well in Denver.
Know.
Career win percentage in Denver, 100%. The all-time win percentage leader over Woody Page. We'll see you guys tomorrow.